Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for the invitation and the ability to speak about something which, unfortunately, I have to say, is still a bit in progress and it's not completely written down yet. Essentially, I'm going to give two talks, and what I'm going to speak about today is safe, and what I'm going to speak about tomorrow is still a bit speculative. So, well, the title is Critical Percolation on Other Lattices. So first I'd like to say what I mean by that and give a bit of historical context for what I'm going to talk about. So the aim of the talk is to see what can be said about scaling limits for percolation, and morally, so you will look at percolation at PC on a lattice with a given mesh and let the mesh go to zero and see if you can define a scaling limit, and hopefully you want to prove that you get convergence to SLE6 or to something obtained in terms of SLE6 such as the full scaling limits of the family of boundaries or stuff like that. And so essentially this is known only in one case, which is the case of the triangular lattice. And the main step in the proof is to obtain one quantitative estimate which converges in the scaling limit. So this is as the mesh goes to zero. And converges to something which is known as Cardy's formula. So the quantity is the following. Take, say, a rectangle. And in this rectangle, you take the triangular lattice. You look at side percolation on the triangular lattice. T is the triangular lattice. You look at side percolation. And for that, you know that PC is equal to 1/2. And then, as the mesh goes to zero, you look at the probability of the following event. Probability that there is a horizontal crossing, so from left to right here, composed only of open sides. So the probability that there is an open path crossing the rectangle. And so it was a remarkable work of Stas Smirnov, who unfortunately is not here today, that as delta goes to zero, this indeed converges to some function which is a deterministic function of the aspect ratio of the rectangle. So let's say this is A and B. This converges to some function f of the ratio A over B. So the exact expression of f is what is known as Cardy's formula. And the relevant feature of this convergence is that f is actually conformally invariant, in the sense that if you get the same picture which is different in a different domain, so you take a conformal rectangle, meaning a simply connected domain with four points marked on the boundary, and you want to know if there is an open crossing from, say, which this part of the boundary to that part of the boundary, the probability that this happens. So again, you take a very fine mesh and you look at percolation and the side percolation and triangular lattice in this domain, this probability will converge to some function of the domain and the location of the points. So, say this is omega, and you have four points on the boundary. And by conformal invariant, I mean that given this domain, there is a unique rectangle up to scaling, such that there is a conformal map from omega to the rectangle mapping the four points here to the four corners here. So this gives you the value of the ratio A over B, which is essentially the cross ratio between these four points. And then this limit here and this limit here is the same if you relate this domain to this domain diagonal conformal map. So essentially, if you can prove that, so I should write here. If you can prove that there is convergence of this observable to a continuous version of it, then this turns out to be sufficient to prove that there is indeed convergence of the interfaces to boundaries of SLE process. In fact, the details are quite tricky, and they are well glanced about in Snell's paper, and they are written down in the paper by Camilla and Newman, same paper where they define the full scaling limit of percolation. So the natural question when you see that is, what's so special about the triangular lattice? Why can't you say something like that for other lattices? And in particular, can F be computed, and can you expect that F is the same for different lattices? So I guess that's part of what is called universality. So the question is, you take some arbitrary lattice. So obviously the most natural lattice to look at in this setup will be Z2 with edge percolation. You can ask the same question, what's the limit of the probability of crossings for rectangles? And if you assume that there is a scaling limit, it's natural to assume that there will be some function f, which a priori depends on the lattice. So maybe I should call this f for the triangular lattice. So there are two questions. Can you prove that there is indeed convergence, and can you relate f to f delta? And universality conjecture or whatever says that this function should be the same. In other words, if you look at critical percolation on any lattice, the scaling limit is essentially the same, and you forget about the local structure of the lattice, and you only see the big picture and the fact that it's percolation. So here I would like to say a few words about that, because strictly speaking, as I said it, universality cannot hold. The trivial counterexample is this. You look at Z2, but you embed it in the plane in a way which is not isotropic at all. You just contract one of the directions. Well, here, the probability to cross, say, a square by critical percolation here, if you map it back to get the usual square lattice, well, this is exactly the probability to cross a very wide rectangle with a square lattice. So in particular, this is not symmetric at all. The probability to cross in this direction is much bigger than the probability to cross in this direction. So you cannot expect the limit of this model to be conformally invariant, because it's not even rotationally invariant. So here you see that in this direction it's much shorter, so the probability should be much bigger. So one question to which I don't have any clue to the answer is the following. It's a big open question. Probably the answer would give some insights into the nature of the process. Question is, given a lattice on the plane, what embedding should you choose in order to obtain a scaling limit which is conformally invariant or rotational invariant? So because this should essentially be sufficient. So I will probably come back to that tomorrow in the framework of triangulations, because then there is one natural candidate for the embedding, which is constructed in terms of circle packings. But maybe I should stop here and come back to this tomorrow when I have spoken about triangulation. So the plan today is to say what can be said about V2. And if you look at the proof of Smirnov for this convergence, you see that there is an essential part, a combinatorial lemma in there, which really uses the fact that it's a triangulation. And then there are geometric considerations when he uses the fact that it's really the triangular lattice with equilateral triangles. So the natural turn of attack for this problem on Z2 is first to relate Z2 to a triangulation and see if you can relate the crossing probabilities on Z2 and crossing probabilities for a given triangulation, and then try to extend Smirnov's proof to a general triangulation. So that's two parts. I have two talks to give for that, essentially the plan. So today I'm going to tell you how to go from Z2 to a triangulation and how we can relate the crossing probabilities for both models. Okay. But first, I would like to make a list of the tools I will use in order to study this model. And the first one is known as Russell-Simmel-Welsch theory. So seeing as the audience is not purely probabilistic, maybe I should spend a few minutes explaining what this is all about. So essentially, Russell-Simmel-Welsch theory is the following result. So it's due to Russell, Simmel, and Welsch, as the name says, that say you look at critical percolation at PC for edge percolation and Z2. Then, so I put the quantifiers on there, I will explain. For each A and B, there is eta such that for all n, the following happens. So if you take a shape which is a rectangle of size n A by n B, should get the same as here, and A by n B, and you look at the probability that there is a crossing in this rectangle. So A and B are fixed, so the aspect ratio is fixed, and you will let n vary. And what it tells you is that the probability that there is a crossing here is bounded away from 0 and from 1 uniformly in n. So maybe there is n0 such that this makes sense, but essentially you can control the crossing probabilities away from 0 and away from 1. And this gives a positive indication that the scaling limit should exist and should be non-trivial, because in particular, f delta here is also comprised between eta and 1 minus eta. So this is originally proved on Z2. It also holds on the triangular lattice. A very natural question when you try to generalize this kind of results is to first generalize this result to other lattices. And so here, maybe I should say a few words about the proof of this theorem, because this proof seems to use one feature which is not natural to use in this context quite heavily. So, okay, the fact which is used extensively here, and which maybe I should have stated earlier, is the following. If you look at the case when A and B are both equal, so you look at the square, if you look at edge percolation on Z2 on a square, then the probability to cross from left to right, so the probability of this event here, is equal to 1/2. Approximately, because if you want to square, you need to take a rectangle of n plus 1 by n. But essentially, you should think about this probability as being equal to 1/2. And the reason for that is the following. If you look at the lattice Z2, well, there is a dual lattice obtained by taking edges orthogonal to these edges. So there is one vertex for each face of the original lattice, and there is one edge per edge, and they cross like that. But then, given the percolation configuration on the white lattice, you can obtain a configuration on the yellow lattice by saying that if one given edge of the white lattice is open and the corresponding yellow edge is closed and vice versa. And then if there is a crossing like that, well, that's what you want to estimate. If there is no crossing from left to right, what it means is exactly that there is a family of closed edges which block this crossing. What that means is that in the dual lattice, there is actually a vertical crossing in the same square from the top to the bottom. But then since it's a square, and since the model you obtain on the yellow lattice is exactly the same as the one you take on the white lattice, because BC here is equal to 1/2, then the probability to cross from left to right is equal to the probability to cross from top to bottom. And this tells you exactly that the probability to cross is equal to 1/2, because you have partitioned the whole space into two events of the same probability. And in passing, the fact that PC is equal to 1/2 is essentially obtained using this argument, which also seems to be very specific to V2. So just a few words about the proof of Russo-Simoes, starting from this. So what you want to give is an explicit lower bound for crossing probabilities of a given domain. Maybe the simplest one is this 3/2 rectangle, or 3n/2n rectangle. You want to construct a configuration with positive probability with a left-right crossing of this rectangle. So the natural thing is to cross lots of squares and in such a way that you can glue the crossings together. Then use the FKG inequality to say that the probability of this is bigger than the product of probabilities, and conclude that you have something positive in the end. So the natural thing is to take two squares which overlap, cross the left one, cross the right one, and then cross something vertically to connect. And if you do it this way, it doesn't work directly. So the trick is to demand for the first crossing to land on the lower half of the square. So the probability that there is a left-right crossing is actually bigger than the probability that the following happens. First, there is a left-right crossing of the first square landing here. Then there is a vertical crossing inside this square landing here. And then there is a horizontal crossing. I need a third column, sorry. From this curve to this curve. That's essentially what you build. And then, essentially, these three events, they look exactly the same. You have something which looks like a square, and you want to cross from one side to half of the opposite side of it. And so here, by symmetry of V2, what you get is that the probability that this happens in a square from one full side to half of the next side, like that, this is at least 1/4. Because if you have a crossing, then it lands on top or on the bottom or on both. And so you get this lower bound here, and the probability that this happened three times, you get this estimate. Well, you need to be a bit careful about measurability and about constructing everything explicitly, but that's the main idea. And so once you can cross these kind of rectangles, then you can glue them together with intersections that are squares, so you don't need this trick to generalize that to any rectangle. But as you see, the main tool here is symmetry. So if you don't have symmetry, these tools cannot work. And the natural question is, does Russo-Simoes hold? So do you have Russo-Simoes without symmetry? And apparently it's not such a natural question, because I couldn't find references on that anywhere in the literature about these kinds of estimates without the symmetry. And just to conclude this small part of the talk, formally just saying that the crossing property is 1/2 is not sufficient, because you can give counterexamples. Say you look at this time, we look at site percolation on this lattice. So it's the triangular lattice, but it's embedded in the square, like this. But the model you take is not site percolation on that. It's site percolation condition that two sites on the same diagonal here are in the same state. So it's essentially percolation in one dimension. But you take it at p equals 1/2, and then the crossing probability, the probability that you can cross from here to here, then you have to use sites on a diagonal, and then it's exactly the probability that the sites on this diagonal are open. So the probability that there is a left-right crossing in this model is exactly 1/2. But on any other square which is not oriented along the axis, then you get a crossing probability which is 1 or 0 depending on the orientation. So this contradicts Rousseau-Semmelweis, even though you have a priori estimate on crossing probabilities. And you get some symmetry, because here you get symmetry according to this diagonal. So I have no clue how to prove Rousseau-Semmelweis without the symmetry. But probably it's right. So from now on, I will assume that Rousseau-Semmelweis holds for all the lattices I will look at. But this is not a strong restriction, because typically today I'm going to talk about Z2 and other lattices obtained from Z2. And for them you do have the symmetry and the a priori estimates. So for them you can prove Rousseau-Semmelweis using the usual method. So this is not a strong restriction for now, but it will be a strong restriction if you want to prove the general result on general triangulations. Okay, so the second kind of estimates which I'm going to use, they are a bit more recent than this, and they are essentially due to Kesten. And others, and they concern events known as existence of arms in percolation configurations. So the question is the following: instead of looking at crossings of a rectangle, you will take an annulus, and inner radius is order 1, and outer radius is R, and you want to estimate the probability that you have families of clusters, open or closed clusters, or in the case of edge percolation, clusters and dual clusters, crossing between this small circle and big circle here. So you want to estimate, say, the probability of this kind of event. So this I will call a four-arm configuration. So once again, if you assume that there is a scaling limit, then this, by a subadditivity argument, has to be some power of R. So this has to scale like R to the minus some exponent psi 4, 4 for the number of arms. And the question is how to compute psi, and then there is this whole SLE business, and essentially you can compute that if you assume that there is a scaling limit, and that was done by Vendelin and Stas in a nice paper. But there are some things you can say without assuming the existence of the exponent and without assuming that there is a scaling limit in a few cases, so for a few values of the number of arms. And essentially, what you can say is something about the 5-arms configuration and something about the relation between 4, 5, and 6. So why can you say that? Well, first of all, take a rectangle or square I want to give an upper bound on the number of points around which there are five arms. And for that, well, I will look at the following picture here. Look at the picture with the crossing. So there's a crossing like that. Well, if there is a site around which there are five arms, say here, means that the situation has to look like that. Has to be a cut point for the crossing. And so this is the typical look of a four-arm point if you want the end points of the arms to be on different sides of the square. And then among all these points, you can look at the first one, and then you see that the first one is characterized by the existence of an additional arm like that. So essentially, a five-arm point is a first four-arm point on a crossing component in the box. And so the probability that this happens, well, it's something, but the number of points like that is 0 or 1. It's 0 if there are such four-arm points on the cluster, and it's 0 if there aren't. So the sum of probabilities over all the square to have five arms like that is smaller than the expected number, is equal to the expected number of points, which is smaller than 1. And what you get is that the probability that a given point has five arms with prescribed sides for the endpoints for n sides, this is smaller than 1 over the number of points, so it's smaller than, so this is n by n constant times n to the minus 2. Then if you don't prescribe the position of the ends of the arms, well, essentially you want to compare this to the undescribed case, and that's essentially applying Rousseau Semmelweis, saying that if you can do that, then with positive probability you can add something like that, and vice versa, if you have crossings you can modify the picture outside, say n over 2, to get exactly this picture with the prescribed ends, and you get the probability to get 5 arms. This is smaller than n to the minus 2, the constant. And here, this uses only Rousseau-Semmelweis. Of course, there are fine details, but essentially Rousseau-Semmelweis is sufficient to prove that. Well, the last thing I want to say about arms is what happens for six arms and for four arms. So here, I will do the picture here. What does it mean for there to be six arms in the picture? Well, there are to be four arms here, and then two arms in the complement of these. Say if you want alternating colors, you need existence of two additional arms like that. And then the probability to have six arms, you can write in terms of conditional probabilities, the probability to have four arms times the conditional probability to have somewhere in the complement two arms. And then the one inequality I didn't use yet is the BK inequality, which will tell you that the probability to have two arms in the complement is much smaller than the square of the probability to have one arm in the complement, because these two arms, they cannot use the same size, so they have to be disjoint events. And this will tell you that actually there is some positive alpha such that the probability to have four arms, which is the event by which you condition, 10 to the 6 ounce, this is smaller than 10 to the 5 ounce squared times n to the minus half. In other words, in terms of exponents, you get strict convexity in terms of the number of arms. So this tells you that psi 4 plus psi 6 is strictly bigger than psi 5 times 2. So this also does not use anything else than Russell-Simon wedge. Okay, so these are the tools I'm going to need today. Now, if I have any questions or comments at this point. Okay. Okay, so remember we want to look at critical edge percolation on the square lattice. So we get, this is a piece at V2, and each edge is open with solubility 1 half and closed with solubility 1 half. And you want to relate that to side percolation on the triangulation. So the first step is to go from edge percolation to side percolation. Well, what does it mean that there is, say, crossing in edge percolation? It means that there is a chain of open edges spanning from one side to the other side. If you want to look at in terms of side percolation, then the natural setup is to define the second graph with one side for each edge, and with the same connectivity as the edge at the edges of V2. So you put an edge with between two green sides if the corresponding edges share a vertex. So this will tell you that this point, for instance, is connected to this, 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 and this, plus these two points here. And each point like that will be connected to six neighbors like this. So you have squares like this, and you get crosses like this. So this green graph is called the covering graph. And you can find this construction, for instance, in Kesten's book on percolation. And essentially, edge percolation in V2 is the same as side percolation on the covering graph of V2, which is this graph. So the problem, as you can see, is that this graph is non-planar. You have edges that cross it and themselves. This is non-planar. So the step two will be to make this lattice planar. And how can you do that? When you have crossing edges, the natural thing to do is to add a vertex at the intersection between them. So I will do the picture with the tilted by 45 degrees here. So this is a piece of the covering graph of V2. The period of it is something like that. So every second square contains two edges which cross somewhere. And so to make it planar, you just add vertices, yellow vertices here. So these green vertices I will call vertices of type 1. These yellow vertices I will call vertices of type 2. And then, well, to relate the percolation picture in this lattice, you have to make them open with priority 1. And it's easy to see that this does not change the connectivities. It cannot connect sites which were not connected before, because if you have to use this site, it means that you go from here to here. And these two were connected anyway in the original lattice. So in that picture, you get sites of site 1, which are present with priority 1/2, and sites of type 2, which are open with priority 1. So they are always present. So step 3 is to obtain the triangulation. Well, you have already guessed what I'm going to do. I'm going to add vertices of type 3 in the next squares. Like this. So the lattice I will obtain is the following. One period of it will be this 2/2 square. These sites are present with priority 1/2. You get sites of type 2, which are present with priority 1. And you get sites of type 3, which are here, and present with priority 0. So adding a site with priority 0, it means that you don't add the site at all, so you don't change anything. So the picture here is the same as the original picture on Z2. And then step 4, remember you want to obtain a picture which is critical site percolation on a triangulation of the plane. This is not quite it, because the sites don't have the same parameter. So you want to start from this lattice and obtain the lattice with priority 1/2 on each vertex. And this is what I want to call interpolation. You define the parameter Q for your model, which will be the presence probability of vertices of type 3. And then for each value of Q, there is a critical value of the probability you will take for size of type 2, which is exactly 1 minus Q. So this is the lattice I'm going to be interested in the last 15 minutes. It's this completion of the square lattice with sites of type 2, which are present with probability 1 minus Q, and sites of type 3 present with probability, equal to Q. And then, well, Q equals 0 is exactly Z2, and Q equals 1/2 is critical percolation on a triangulation. Which is what I'm going to talk about tomorrow. So the question is how to go from Q equals to 0 to Q equals to 1/2, and can you relate the crossing probabilities for different values of Q? Well, you want to prove universality, so you want to prove that this probability in the limit does not depend on Q. And the way you do that, well, you compute the derivative in Q and you prove that this is 0 in the scaling limit. And taking the derivative of a probability with respect to one parameter, this can be done using what's called as Russell's formula. But here it's not exactly Russell's formula, it's a little generalization of it. But it says the following. You want to compute. So you define f of q, which is the probability with parameter q that there is a crossing in this big rectangle, n a by n b, so that there is a crossing that is. What happens when you go from q to q plus epsilon? Well, there are two things which can happen. You can take a site of type 3 and make it open instead of closed. And this changes whether there's a crossing or not if this site is something like this. If opening this site connects this side to this side, meaning that this is the only possible point of crossing, meaning that there are two arms like this. So such a site is called pivotal. Site is pivotal for a given event, so for here for the crossing event, if whether the event happens or not depends on the state of this site. And so if you go from Q to Q plus epsilon, you can open sites of type 3, or you can close sites of type 2. And again, this has an effect if and only if the site is pivotal. And then Russell's formula tells you that f prime of q is the expected value of the number of pivotal sites of type 3, so of increasing probability as a function of q, minus the expected number of pivotal sites of type 2. And this minus sign here is exactly the same as this minus sign here. So this is what you want to estimate. You want to show that this goes to zero as n goes to infinity. If you have that, then you get the fact that any possible subsequential limit of f as n goes to infinity has to be constant. And so if you take subsequential limits to ensure that this has a limit, then you show that these limits have to be equal. Okay, so this is what you want to estimate. And the way you will prove that this goes to zero is to show that if you take neighboring points, one of type 2 and one of type 3, then they are pivotal with essentially the same probability. And this is where the arm configurations will be useful. Each of these terms is exactly of this order. Well, n to the minus xi4, assuming that xi4 exists, which we don't know. Anyway. So the first essential remark is the following. If you look at the picture around one point, say of type 3, you want this point to be pivotal. It means that there have to be four arms of alternating colors around this point. So you have this site of type 3, so it has parameter q, and you need four arms and you have four corners, so it means that locally the picture is exactly this one. You get two open arms and two closed arms, which have to start from this and land on the boundary of the domain, each on one given side of it. But if you look at, say, what happens here up to some big square of side, say, epsilon, positive, which is epsilon n, so it's macroscopic, it's same order as the side of the box, it is a square centered at the point here. Well, this picture is symmetric. If you change the color of all the sides and you change q into 1 minus q, you get an event which has the same probability. So you have alternating arms down of opposite colors, but this time around the point of type 2. So what it tells you is that these probability, they want to be equal. Except, well, the only difference, if you want to compare, say, this probability with the probability of the neighboring site here, if you want to compare probability that this one is pivotal and probability that this one is pivotal, this 1 minus q site, well, the changing of the color of this preserves exactly the probability. What you want to do next is a shift of the picture by one mesh of the lattice. And then some things can happen here that say there was one arm in the original picture, but on the shifted domain, there is no arm anymore. How can that happen? Well, the only possibility for this arm not to continue here is for there to be this kind of closed arm which prevents it from continuing. And as it turns out, this configuration here, so that's three arms going from one mesh to something of positive diameter, this can also be estimated exactly using the same kind of reasoning as this one. And for a given site x, the probability that x has three arms in a half plane, so this is half plane because there is a boundary and these three arms have to live inside the domain, this behaves like n to the minus 2. And the proof is essentially the same. You look at the landing point of the crossing here. If you are the landing point, the lowest possible landing point, it means that there is an arm going from here to here. So probability to have two arms scales like n to the minus 1. And then, well, you do the same kind of thing once again to say that if it's the lowest and the highest, then these events are essentially independent and you get n to the minus 2. So what you get is the following probability that this one is pivotal, so this 3 is pivotal, is the probability that this one is pivotal times 1 minus big O of 10 to the minus 2. Okay, this pivotal, I'm going a bit fast because by that I mean there are four arms in a square of size epsilon n. This is not quite the same as being pivotal for the whole domain, because of course the position of the landing points on the boundary of this square will have an effect of the global probability for these points to be pivotal. And the landing points here, well, they're not the same for both cases because you have switched the colors. So maybe this will force the green path to land on the corner and the violet parts to land on the side, and maybe this is not yet sufficient. So what you want to do is to say more precisely how the picture looks around a pivotal point of type 3 and a pivotal point of type 2 if they are, if they look the same from far. And essentially you want to couple them, you want to couple these two events which have the same probability, so it's natural that there's a coupling between them, in such a way that whatever happens in the large scale is the same for both pictures. So here's one way to do it. Well, first of all, assume that you've done that. Assume that there is a coupling such that these two correspond to configurations which agree outside the radius square root of n. So you get agreement outside square root of n. So this is the domain. This is epsilon n. This is root of n. This is 1. And you get the same configuration outside root of n. So you get outside, you get these two arms here and these two arms here. And inside, well, they cannot be the same because one of them has this point which is pivotal and the other one has this one. But if it's the same, well, conditionally to this configuration, you want to know the probability that this site or the other one are pivotal, so the probability that you can continue these arms to the boundaries, like this and like this. Well, two things can happen. You can continue them using only wherever the configurations agree, and then the conditional probabilities are the same. So then you get exactly the equality for the true event you want to compute the probability of. Or this is not sufficient, and you need to use more sites which are inside the square root of n. And say this green part here has to come inside to connect here. What does it mean? Well, it means that you cannot connect to this part here. So it means that there is something in the way. And this thing in the way makes it look like the following. You step back a few steps, and you look and see that in this case, you have six arms between root of n and n. So the probability that this happens, roughly speaking, is the following. You need four arms between 1 and root of n. So you get n to the power 1 half of psi 4. And then you need six arms between root of n and n. So you get n to the minus 1 half psi 6. And then you need to continue by also same OH. This is probability 1. Well, this is a slight abuse of notation because psi 4 is not known to exist. So this should actually be stated as probability to have four arms between 1 and square root of n. But if you remember, this is smaller than, so psi 4 plus psi 6 is bigger than psi 5. So this is n to the minus 2 plus alpha times bigger of 1. And the good thing is that number of points is n to the minus 2, n to the power 2. You get n to the power minus 2 plus alpha. So the expected number of points where this happens goes to 0. And so this does not contribute to the estimate. It contributes up to n to the minus alpha, which will go to 0. So this is OK. And essentially, then, what you have to control is whether you can couple the configurations in such a way that they agree outside square root of n. And the argument turns out to be the same. I mean, going from 1 to n from one point or for the other, I have to do the following. So this is n, this is epsilon n, this is root of n, this is 1. You have two points here, and you want to go up to n. So first of all, you will take something like 18 here containing these two points. You will condition that this small circle is connected to n, like this. Like this. And then, knowing that, you want either of these points to be connected by four arms to these four arms here. And once again, either you can do it within square root of n, or you can't. Well, if you can, it means that you have the coupling. You didn't choose what's outside, so you see the same thing. If you can't, well, it's the same picture. It means that, say, this purple arm has to go outside to connect. And if it has to, it means that it's separated by a green arm. And so once again, you see four arms and six arms, and you get the same estimate for the probability of this event, and it's again n to the minus 2 plus alpha, which again is smaller than n to the minus 2. So the main contribution is from the terms where the coupling is the same outside square root of n, in which case, the probability that the points are pivotal is the same up to n to the minus 2 plus alpha. And so if you sum that, you get f prime of q going to 0 as n to the minus alpha. So essentially, this gives you the fact that f does not depend on q in the scaling limit. So the crossing probability is the same for v2 and for triangulation. That's essentially what I wanted to say today. I will end with just one additional consideration. Well, first of all, this construction you can do is starting from any lattice, not only Z2. This whole construction will be essentially the same. And there is one case which is probably of interest. So follow me. Take Z2 again, but take psi spacolation on Z2. So each site is present with priority PC. You make that into a triangulation by adding vertices inside each face with priority 0, so you don't change anything. And again, you want to interpolate between this and a triangulation with priority 1/2. So you put Q here, and you put PC of Q here. Such a way that PC of 0 is PC site of V2, and PC of 1/2 is 1/2, because it's a triangulation. It has all the symmetry in it. Well, you will have Russell-Simmel-Welsch for each value of Q, because you have the symmetry in everything, meaning that S prime cannot blow up. It has to remain bounded. And so what it means is, if you write Russell's formula here, we'll tell you that the probability that a site of type 1 is pivotal times PC prime of Q. So this was minus 1 here. Here it's not 1 minus Q, it's PC of Q here. Plus the probability that given site of type 2 is pivotal. This is small. It's little o of n to the minus 2, or big O of n to the minus 2 at most. So what you get is that PC prime of Q equals minus P of type 2 is pivotal over P of type 1 is pivotal plus little O of whatever, in particular little O of 1. So say if you can compute this ratio, and there's a chance you can do that by local modification, you take a configuration where the site of type 2 is pivotal, and you transform it to a configuration where the site of type 1 is pivotal, what you get is a differential equation in PC of Q. And then potentially you will get the value of PC of 0, because you know it's on 1/2. So I don't know if this is believable, but maybe it will give some insights as to the value of PC for site percolation and square lattice, if this is doable. Well, I tried. Apparently, it's not doable. It's not easier than computation of PC of 0 directly. In any case, it gives, I believe it's a nice picture, at least. OK, that's it for today. Thank you.